Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Forza Italian Football Podcast. As ever, I'm your host, Connor Clancy, and I'm joined by just one man this week. Kev Pogzielski is here with me. Kev, hello, how are you?
I'm good. I'm big enough for two men. Or
are you?
Persons.
In which dimension?
Not in physical stature, just in character, personality. It's 2021. It's a new miss, a new year. It's a new me.
Right, I was going to say, it's not the first time we've spoken this year. We spoke last weekend, right? It's hard to keep tabs on what's happening. Obviously, there was a round of Serie A in between us last speaking, but as you pointed out, my timetable didn't allow for us to record after that midweek round. But anyway, look, we are back. There has been another round of Serie A football. It was round number who knows what. It was 17, I believe. And not too much happened, but I suppose the big winners of the weekend were probably Milan and maybe Juve. But we're going to start with Juve because that is the match that we've both just finished watching on this Sunday evening. They beat Sassuolo. I'm kind of obliged to say they beat 10-man Sassuolo 3-1. But Kev, is it fair to say that it wasn't convincing from Juve?
No, not at all. There's probably two sides to this. There's the midweek victory over Milan, where I won't say the first time, but I think sometimes with my age I kind of forget things. It was one of the few times that I've seen a game behind closed doors played with such sort of intensity from both sides midweek. So then you looked at tonight and you thought obviously the 3 points that Juve got in Milan put them in a great position with their game in hand to sort of kick on for the title challenge. And they're facing another side that will pose a threat to them. So you think they'd be at it, you know, you think the players would be on it. And the first half was slow, ponderous. They were extremely deep. I know Sassuolo present that threat on the breakaway, but they seem to sort of kind of play into their hands. And there were a couple of times when Sassuolo threatened to break, and Bonucci, arguably because he had two or three defenders following back with him, only picked up a booking for a sort of a tactical foul, a tug on Capuso. And then you had Bentancur on Juricic. That's how you pronounce it. I always get one terribly wrong. As they looked to break, and he almost rugby tackled him to the ground. But yeah, they were really, really fortunate because Pedro Abiang was sent off on 45 minutes. They almost took the lead just before half-time, and Ronaldo seemed to hesitate as the ball sort of rolled across an empty goal.
That was really strange, wasn't it?
Yeah, you saw him stutter as well. You saw him almost lift his leg as if on the British commentary said they expected him to kind of slide so he reached the ball. Instead, he sort of he hesitated, ended up stopping the ball on the line, and it got his got shepherded away. And eventually, if Chiriquez hasn't sort of left the ball to run across the 6-yard box and Ramsey tap it in, I'm not sure if I saw Juventus getting a goal another way. I know they scored three on the night, but the last one is because at that point the visitors are spent and Ronaldo just breaks away and he's clinical in those positions. I think that breaks to somebody else and we could see him fire over and it ends 2-1, which would have helped my match report because then I had to squeeze in a late goal, which is always difficult to do. But they go to Inter next week. So I think the 3 points are really important with keeping some form of momentum, but based purely on the performance, they still look like they're stuttering this season.
They do. And even in this game, Cristiano Ronaldo wasn't himself. There was that chance that you would have put all of the money you have ever saved in your life on him scoring it after Kulusevski teed him up, basically from the penalty spot. And he failed to find the corner when you would have really just... It's the kind of chance that he usually takes with his eyes closed, you know? And it just wasn't to be. Kulusevski himself missed a pretty poor chance in the first half. He had just come on not too long before that. But, I mean, on another day, I guess Juve did have their chances to win this a little bit more comfortably than it turned out to be in the end. But, I mean, what a performance from Sassuolo, because they went down to 10 men away to Juve for the majority of the match. Obiang got sent off just before half-time, so they had to negotiate the entire second half with 10 men. And I can't be alone in thinking that I thought it looked like it was 11 against 11. And at times, it even looked like Sassuolo had the extra man when they were attacking, because they really pegged Juve back. And do you reckon that this was a case of attack almost being the best form of defence, where De Zerbi thought, well, if we have the ball in your half, you can't be near our goal, so let's just keep on attacking, guys?
I'm not sure, because at half-time, De Zerbi made some substitutions to go slightly more defensive, which he kind of had to do. That's what probably made me feel that the performance on Juventus' side was so poor, because actually the chances you're talking about didn't really come until they went down to 10 men. I thought that the benefit that Sassuolo have is that they do still pose that threat because they are so good in attack, whereas pick any number of other sides where it would have just been backs to the wall and nothing really else going forward. I mean, but with that confidence they've got, then they can still pose a threat. And they probably are intelligent enough to realise that does form a basis for your defence. I mean, what was good from a sort of a neutral, if you like, for the spectacle, was that they equalised pretty quickly, because the Danilo goal came sort of 6 minutes into the second half. And if they got a second after that, then it could have been a completely different contest. But again, they showed that... That sort of courage, I suppose, to continue attacking Juve, even though they could have probably got another two or three goals if they'd just gone gung-ho.
I received a text message during the first half of this match, which said, what's going on with the kits in the Juve Sassuolo game? You have to ask Kev to explain what's happening there, because I couldn't work it out, Kev, because Juve's home kit is basically all white, right? So Sassuolo wore all white. So then Juve had to change to their, I don't know what kit it is now, their fourth, fifth, seventh kit. I don't know, the navy blue one.
I'll refer to it as their nicest kit.
It is their nicest
because
kit.
I do think it is their nicest kit. But because I was doing my sort of pre-match prep, I sort of had the laptop on in front of me and I had the TV on. And then sort of lifted my head as the referee was blowing his whistle. And I had all of the Sassuolo players facing away from me, and I just saw the white sort of backs of it. And my eyes hadn't quite adjusted to notice that it was green numbering. So I was actually looking at Juventus players thinking, what kit of Sassuolo? That's not black and green straight. And it did. It took me 30 seconds to realise that Juve were at home but not playing in their home street. I don't know. I always... You moaned at me regularly on this for my old fashionism or whatever we call it. being a traditionalist, but I think at the very least you should wear your home strip at home. But I can only assume that the white away kit clashes with Juve's home kit and the black stripes on their home kit clashes with Juve's home
kit. But even if that was the case, Sassuolo have that amazingly funky third kit. You know, the really bright blue and green one. So I don't know why they didn't just wear that.
Yeah, I'd forgotten about that, actually. Because I hadn't recalled a third kit for Sassuolo. But even then, I think if they're on the away side, they should probably be forced to either at the start of the season design a away kit that doesn't clash with any other home side's traditional colours. Or bring out a third strip.
I don't know. I feel like if your away kit is involving different colours from your home, that's fair enough. But Juve are a bit of a joke. I mean, that kit that they wore tonight shouldn't be too different from their home kit. It's just that this year they're pretending to be Real Madrid, so it looked a little bit different. But Juve got the win. We're not going to talk about them too much more, but I do think that they deserve a bit of credit for getting the win, because it's something that they haven't always done this season. They've drawn more games than they have than they would have in a normal season. But they didn't play well but won, which is what we've praised them for so often in the past. They kind of needed to win because Milan won again. Of course they did. They played Torino at home, which was always going to be a bit of a gimme. Rafael Leao and Frank Kessie scored. Kessie got another penalty for Milan. It's not a shot at you guys, Milan fans. It's just a fact. But Rafael Leao, he's quite a joy recently, isn't he? Ibrahimovic came in and almost seemed to put an arm around him, and his form improved from there. But now, even in Ibra's absence, he's doing some big things.
Yeah, he seems to be taking a lot of responsibility. You know, asking for the ball, going looking for the ball, holding it up, being the person that sort of puts Milan on the front foot when they attack. Shows the likes of Diaz that, you know, things come from running at players and taking them on and showing a little bit of ingenuity. You know, just take the goal last weekend, you know, just chasing onto what could have just rolled harmlessly through to the goalkeeper and getting there before him and then wonderfully finishing. And it was a really, really nice finish, like a team move that put Milan in the lead. And if we consider that the loss to Juventus was probably their first major setback this season, it was an excellent response, because anybody who watched the game just you would have realised that Milan just constantly looked in control for the entire 90 minutes, really.
What do we think about the penalties? Both decisions correct. Milan were given a penalty after VAR intervention, and Torino had a penalty taken away from them after VAR intervention.
Well, you can talk on the Torino one, because I must have missed it.
Okay.
Because I only saw the first half in full. The Milan penalty wasn't a penalty for me. I think there's an element of Diaz falling into Belotti. I think, oddly, if Belotti's not there, he probably, because he overruns the ball, he probably runs past the ball and there's a defender behind him that's close enough to kind of like just clear it away. Interestingly, I can't remember who it was he passed before he approached Belotti, but it looked like they caught him on the heels, oddly, with it inside the box, and he kind of stumbled a little and then was kind of between, I've gone probably a step too far to go down after that initial challenge, but I'll throw myself into this next one that's coming. And yeah, it was soft, and certainly goes into that category of seeing them given if it hadn't been awarded.
Yeah, I tend to think that that isn't a penalty, that one. It did look like Belotti got a little toe on the ball, and yeah, if Diaz hadn't already been going down, Belotti wouldn't have been able to kick his leg before getting the ball, because Diaz had run past the ball, which is an unusual thing to do.
Well, it's almost Diaz kicks Belotti before Belotti's foot touches the ball. And there's there was a penalty in the Fiorentina-Cagliari game this afternoon where Vlahovic kicks the defender. And nearly got given. It went to VAR, but he kicks the defender milliseconds after defenders sort of toe poke the ball out of his path because he, you know, he's about to strike from about, I don't know, 8 or 10 yards away.
I think the Torino one was probably the right call. I mean, I can't remember which Torino player it was now, but they were lining up a shot and Tonali just kind of got his foot in between the ball and the swinging leg, and then he ended up getting a kick in the back of the calf and injured himself, I believe.
Did you notice the collision on Theo Hernandez in the build-up to the Milan opener?
He got
absolutely clattered by Thomas Rincon. Rincon just body checked him, and he took a hell of a hit. But it just makes me smile because there was an incident in the Milan Juve game where Hernandez sort of took a real painful sort of knock. And it's because he goes down so easily under the least of challenges.
Yeah.
And he tries to stay up after some of the most reckless challenges on him. And they kind of balance each other out. When you get frustrated about him going down easy, when you see him take a sort of full on sort of shoulder barge, and he's in physical pain, you think, well, you know, that's the yin and yang of the situation.
That makes it more frustrating for me because he's a powerful guy. You know, he shouldn't be going down under any old challenge when he can stay up with things like that. But that was a classic example of him just being like a train, right? He got into at full flight and nobody was going to get in the way of him. But then who played the assist? Was it Calhanoglu or Brahim Diaz? Theo offloaded it to Brahim and he played it through to Leao. That was a really nicely worked goal from Milan. So full credit there. Torino, we won't talk about them because we're going to try and get things moving on this week's pod. The biggest game of the round probably came in the capital at the Stadio Olimpico, where Inter and Roma drew 2-2. And Inter have quite, I guess, a troubling record against the top five teams this season. They lost against Milan, they drew against Roma, they drew against Atalanta. I can't really remember the rest of them, but they've got Juve up next, and I mean, the way Juve are going and the way Inter are going, you'd have to say Juve are probably favourites coming into this one.
Yeah, they certainly are based on today's performance. I do always struggle watching the 12:30 kickoffs to work out whether you know, it's a sluggish start from either side or just that time, because they do tend to, and it might be subconscious now. I've seen so many poor games at 12:30 that they all seem, you know, appear to start poor. They were kind of slow entering, closing Pellegrini down. I know his shot from distance got a nick off of Bastoni and went past Handanovic. If anything from this game, because obviously you've got the issue where you're playing a potential title stroke Champions League qualification rival that you're kind of a little bit more hesitant to go all out. Not that many Conte sides go all out, but just the fact that they failed to hold on to that lead, because I can see them getting into that position against Juve next week, particularly if Juve start like they did tonight. But I'd be concerned that they would then be able to hold on to that lead a bit like they gave it up again, because it just came from Roma building pressure on their goal sort of consistently for the last 20-25 minutes, really, and won that corner and Mancini sort of flicked it home.
A quick glance at the score sheet would make you think that there were four unlikely goal scorers in Lorenzo Pellegrini, Gianluca Mancini, Milan Skriniar and Ashraf Hakimi, but Hakimi's becoming a bit of a goleador on the wings, isn't he? He's just going to keep banging them in.
Yeah, there was a game earlier in the season when he scored two. I can't remember who it was. It was against Inter. I can't remember if I mentioned this on another pod once. When a couple of times, I know he was kind of... No, he wasn't on a hat-trick. He'd only scored one at this point. But on two separate occasions close together, Inter broke from the corner. And you think Lukaku, Martinez... But Hakimi was ahead of all of them. He seems to have this determination to get on the score sheet. And obviously it's great when you've got, let's say, not a naturally left-sided wing-back and Ashley Young on the other side, that he provides that sort of attacking threat and determination to get down the wing. But the ability to come in on his left side and sort of put the ball right into the top corner. I know you love a stroke off the bar, and the ones that go bar and then post are quite lovely to watch.
Oh, it was a delicious strike. You can't say anything other than that about it. It was stunning. But you look at Hakimi, and then you see what Theo's doing at Real, or not at Real Madrid, at Milan, and you wonder, why on earth did Real Madrid let the two of them go? Because they're two of the most exciting fullbacks around at the moment. Maybe it's a systemic thing, but I'm not sure. I mean, Theo's very exciting. You know, we've criticized him on this podcast before, and I don't think he's the best left back in the world, like some Milan fans will have you believe, but he's better than Marcelo. You know, he could be at Real Madrid having a bit of a dispute with Ferland Mendy for that left back slot, and I'd have Ashraf over Danny Carvajal any day of the week, to be honest. It's a strange one. It's a very, very strange one. One of the other big teams was here in Parma today on Sunday, and it was Lazio. They beat Parma 2-0. And if we're talking about good goals, we've got to talk about Lazio's second. I believe it was their second, although
yeah,
I can't think. It was their second. Luis Alberto got the first. Second, yeah. And then I mean, everything about it. They were so patiently moving the ball around the edge of the box. And then Ciro Immobile wasn't even looking towards the area that he passed the ball into. But he perfectly slipped it through Parma's defence for Sergej Milinkovic-Savic. And then Sepa came out and went to ground. And he thought, oh, Savic has two options. He's going to dink it over him, or he's going to take it around him and go down and win a penalty. And he didn't either of those. Well, he did dink it over him, but straight across the six-yard box for Felipe Caicedo to run in and tap into an open goal. And it was one of the most enjoyable goals I've seen in the flesh, I think. It was so nicely done. And every pass, or those two final passes, were so precise and so hard to see happening before they happened, too. It was an absolute delight.
Yeah, it was a lovely move. The only way it could have been bettered was if Sepe hadn't brought down Milinkovic-Savic. It was almost as the touch, less being a pass, because he sort of lifted it just a yard or two off the floor over the goalkeeper. If he'd been standing, he could have sort of swept it into the net. I remember Messi doing it against Arsenal in the Champions League, maybe 5 or 6 years ago now, 7 maybe, I can't remember how last time Arsenal were in the Champions League, where Almunia came out and you thought Messi was just going to shoot, a lot like you would have thought Milinkovic-Savic was today, and he flicks it over him and then just waits for the ball and just sort of slides it home. So that would have really sort of put an even sweeter touch on a wonderful team move.
Yeah, it would have. I thought you were going to say it would have been nicer if Milinkovic-Savic hadn't fallen, played it across to Caicedo, and then Caicedo gave it back to him in the box, which makes me think of, I remember, you might not want me to bring this up, but when Liverpool played Chelsea that time, when Gerrard did the slip and Bale went through on goal.
Oh, yeah.
But did you remember the second goal in that game? Torres broke. And then,
oh, that was it.
And then gave it to Willian. And Willian looked back as if to say, I'll give it to you. But Torres didn't follow in. So Willian had a tap in into an open goal. And yeah, that was an enjoyable moment. It would have been more enjoyable if he had have actually played that pass, because it would have been a bit of a piss take, I guess. There's no other way to describe it. But that was a difficult enough afternoon for you. I'm sure you didn't want to see Fernando Torres scoring.
It was the only time I've driven home for 4 hours and not spoken to anybody. Still to this day.
It was a remarkable game. I just remember seeing Thomas Kalas starting for Chelsea, yeah. And Mourinho was sick with the flu. There's just that celebration afterwards where he's running down the touchline all sick and bunged up, and it's just absolutely classic. It's an all-time great game.
It's very rare I'm speechless.
I can vouch for that, yeah.
But yeah.
But Parma, Liverani's gone, everybody here is a lot happier, and Parma looked a lot better as well. They actually took a shot in the first 10 minutes and then they had another shot in the first 15 minutes, and they showed a lot more attacking intent in the first half of today's game than they had in so long under Liverani. They had 10 shots in all, 3 of them were on target, which, I mean, it's uncharted territory for the Crociati.
So everybody's happy apart from Diversa then.
Yeah, did you see the pictures?
Yeah.
What's that about? And I usually don't like reading into pictures. I often think players and coaches must be so angry just having to take photos all day. But he did look very, very upset in those photos.
He looked like he was being held against his will to coach Palmer. Whether, you know, people can speculate on whether they think he is or isn't, as the fact that they're paying him wages probably restricts him from moving elsewhere. But yeah, it tickled me when I saw it.
I wonder
just
if
the
he
way
is
he was holding the scarf
happy,
up.
Actually, because you've touched on that, because he was being paid by them anyway. So all that's happened now is he's got more work to do for the same amount of money. So you might be a little bit annoyed, but he did say that he's home and things like that. So I do think that it was just an unfortunate couple of photographs that got out. But you'd ask him to take another one, wouldn't you? Just Roberto, yeah. Sorry, do you mind just not looking like we've insulted your family, please?
Also, they could have just used his original photo.
No, because they needed Kraus and Carly in it.
Oh, okay.
So that was
because they probably... You know, they're in a difficult situation and they probably pulled him away from tactical analysis, training, something that he wanted to be doing, you know, rather than doing publicity for the club website or whatever else they're sort of placing these things. But
yeah. But like I said, encouraging signs for Parma, and given that they were without a number of important players as well. I mean, the back four was a little bit makeshift. Osorio was on the right. Valenti and Bruno Alves were at centre-back, and Boozy, what's his first name? Maxime Boozy was playing on the left, which is more or less one of their usual starting four. I would imagine that Valenti and Osorio will become regulars now that Diversa's back. But yeah, promising signs finally for Parma, and it was the first time this season I've gone to a game there and not been bored out of my tree for much of it. But there we go, they're still in the bottom three. They're second from bottom now, but they are just 2 points behind Genoa, Cagliari and Spezia. So it's going to be a bit of a dogfight down there come the end of the season, you would think. Fingers crossed that Parma can climb out of it. Atalanta, the crisis club, they've scored 12 goals in their last three games. I think it's fair to say that they're back, Kev. They beat Benevento 4-1 on the road this time.
Yeah, I think if anybody doesn't or hasn't watched this game, I have two words for them, which is Josip Iličić. Absolute joy, his performance.
He was a joke.
I'm not sure anybody can rival him for player of the week from me this round, but yeah, they're now fifth. What are they, couple of points behind Juve? Crisis.
Yeah, and it is important to note that they do still hold a game in hand over most of Serie A as well, because of that Udinese game in December, which was postponed because of the rain. So they're 3 points off Roma with a game in hand over them, and they are, 9 points behind top with a game in hand over Milan, obviously, as well. So very much there. And, I mean, that's, what is it, 7 games now unbeaten without Papu? The only time he played was in that. He came on at halftime against Juve, and to his credit, he did change it. But I don't know if you saw, Kev, the whole Papu gate has taken yet another strange turn. Gasperini was speaking on Saturday saying that we had great memories with Papu, we had great times with him, but we asked him to adapt and he didn't. That he wanted him to give more help to Freuler and Deron in midfield. And I remember thinking, as he said it, that doesn't seem quite right. And then Papu posted a load of videos on Instagram on Sunday morning of himself doing exactly what Gasperini accused him of not doing. What's happening? It's so strange. It's just very, very strange.
Yeah, it sounds like it's getting a bit toxic, and it's a terrible end, if you like, to, although I don't think the fans will take it with a pinch of salt when you look back on these things. You know, people fall out, things change at football clubs, but I kind of, if anything, listening to you say about, you know, the posting stuff on social media, I know that is very much an avenue for players to sort of get their message across these days, but I think as an Atalanta fan, I would probably be a little disappointed with that response, particularly because, you know, he's not particularly known for being sort of outspoken and using that sort of media to sort of make points. So it's a bit disappointing more than anything.
It is a bit disappointing, isn't it?
Probably for Gasperini as well. You know, because I'm not aware of him sort of, but I suppose he's got to be more vocal as the coach.
Yeah, I mean, Gasperini is a bit of a fiery character, but yeah, it is just a big shame. Anyway, Luis Muriel, I mean, he's the best substitute. I said last season, I think it was, that he's the best substitute in Serie A. He's the best substitute in the world. He's played in 14 Serie A games this season for a total of 454 minutes. He scored 10 goals and assisted 2. So he's scoring every half, basically. And he's assisting as well. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, I saw a tweet of yours or a comment made by you over the weekend about the sort of the best subs. You know, just keep him a sub. You know, we don't need to start him. And it got me thinking to bits of his sort of earlier career and whether when he was almost brought in as the man that the side that he was playing for needed to depend on, he was inconsistent. He kind of struggled to maybe take on that, you know, the responsibility of being sort of the leading man in probably the opposite way as you think that, you know, that's why you start as a patter, because he almost shows up all the time. You know, I'm not saying Muriel isn't at Atalanta. But it is, you know, what he does off of the bench at the moment is in quite a contrast to sort of the inconsistency he showed. Even, you know, I'm not talking about when he was a really young striker, but, you know, when you expected to get more off of him, you know, when he was at Samp. So, yeah, but brilliant yeah. What he provides from the bench.
I mean, he was praised for what he did at Fiorentina, which kind of got him his move to Atalanta. And he played 19 times there, playing more minutes in those 19 games than he did in 34 appearances last season. So in more or less 1,500 minutes for Fiorentina, he scored 6 goals. In 1,200 minutes for Atalanta last season, he scored 18. He's quite clearly very capable of taking advantage of tired legs, because when he gets running, he's very, very quick, but he just burns out really quickly as well. So I do think it's the perfect situation for him at Atalanta.
I suppose if he's starting as well and playing more minutes, it gives fans longer to sort of just raise silly comments about things he's done wrong during a game. And then you see more of them as opposed to sort of when he comes on for sort of 25, 30 minutes.
Yeah, it's true. And now can you think being an opposition defender, right? Because it was 1-1 when Muriel started to get ready. And then Atalanta scored twice in the space of 3 minutes or whatever it was. So it was 3-1. And then Luis Muriel walks onto the pitch. You know you're going to concede again. It just must be an absolute nightmare to play against when you see him coming on, as if you've not got your hands full enough with Atalanta. But yeah, Iličić, we touched on him a little bit briefly, but he did everything, Kev. It was a phenomenal performance. He quite harshly didn't get 2 assists because it was his shot which was saved that Zapata then turned in, assisted to Loyes with that dinked pass to the back post that he had tried so many times before it worked out as well.
Yeah, 2 minutes in, I think he sent a sort of a dinked curling effort to the back post, which I think it must have been Gosens that
it was Gosens,
fired
yeah.
wide. Then he struck the post.
Yeah,
I think after they'd taken the lead. Yes, I think he sort of took a short free kick, skipped past defender Bentner. He was just, oddly enough, it's replaying on my TV again now, but everything is going through him. And he's literally just bent one that took a nick off of a heel and went round the post. It's why sometimes we get games where he bags a hat-trick or more, you know, he can't even excluding the penalties he takes. Phenomenal football, lovely to watch.
Yeah, he is. He's one of those that's really... There aren't too many players as enjoyable to watch as him at the moment. So if you get the chance, do it, because he's getting on a little bit as well. Elsewhere, Udinese and Napoli, you watched this, I didn't. It was a surprisingly entertaining game, and it took, I was shocked to see Timo Bakayoko last minute winner for Napoli to overcome Udinese.
Yeah, I took one for the team, knowing that you were at Parma Lazio, and the only other option that I had on UK broadcast was Udinese Napoli, and it was strangely entertaining. You kind of expected Napoli to win, but they weren't by any great margin the better side. Udinese were clearly planning to play on the counter, but Napoli's rather high line allowed them to do that. They got what looked like a harsh pen, in truth, which Insigne put away, and then they Napoli kind of just. Oh, it was there's no real cutting edge at the front end of the team. Although Lozano went close with a header, and then awful defending for Udinese to get their goal. But it was a game that could have ended 3-3, and Bakayoko stepping up with a goal that came off his head, could have come off his shoulder the way he sort of leapt into just a crowd of players, and they. Marginally deserve victory.
Kev, I'm not happy because Andrea Petagna has been disrespected by Corriere dello Sport over here. He was dubbed, pointed out by Patrick Kendrick, I should say, on Twitter. He was dubbed the backup to the backup's backup's backup. And I just think that's an unnecessary dig.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Well, we all know your feelings for Petagna. I have been surprised to see him sort of starting for Napoli because he played particularly poorly midweek when they lost. Although even though he scored when they lost to Spezia, unless that was last weekend. Again, we've had a week where we've had too many games again in the space of 7 to 8 days.
I'm pretty sure it was midweek. Yeah, it was midweek.
I think that for a club that are potentially looking to re-qualify for the Champions League, want somebody that maybe is a little bit more
not having it
mobile, a little bit more prolific. I know. We could probably go into overtime on this podcast with us arguing over the merits, or lack of from me. But yeah, maybe a little bit disrespectful to say a backup of the backup.
Yeah. Just a little bit, you would imagine. I can't imagine Petagna will be speaking to any journalists from that newspaper for the foreseeable.
I should say before we leave this, because it made it sound as though Napoli really didn't offer anything. Because looking at my notes, I've written down great performance by Wan Musso. I don't know how many saves he made during a game, but he did seem to be pulling off some particularly spectacular ones from sort of close range. So it wasn't as if they didn't have chances. But I say on another day, it could have been 3-3 because Udinese had plenty of chances as well.
I mean, the statistics even suggest that as well. Sorry, I just got distracted because Pedro Obiang has come out to apologise on Twitter. But, sorry, I misread it as well because I was distracted by you while being distracted from you by him. But, yeah, he's apologised for the mistake that cost his team, obviously getting sent off for that nasty challenge. I never wanted to leave the team down to 10 men, Forza Sassuolo. So I thought he had just completely overlooked the fact that he nearly chopped Federico Chiesa's ankle off. But there is a little bit in there saying I also send my condolences or my wishes to Federico Chiesa. So he did get there, following Martin Deron's path, which is nice to see. Kev, you don't look like you're pleased about that.
I wouldn't apologize. Well, apart from my teammates back in the changing room, but the replay, you know, in slow motion makes it look far worse. If I had issue with him at all, it was the position of where it was on the pitch. You know, it was inside the Juventus half. It was 45th minute. They were going nowhere with the ball, and the tackle wasn't there to make, so he had to lunge. And then his lunge is only fractionally off. But obviously the angle and the sort of size of him and the way the part of Chiesa's ankle he's landed on has made it look really bad. And it's more that he shouldn't have even been bothering to challenge in that sort of position.
Kev, did you watch Genoa Bologna, you said?
I did.
Right, well, what's happening there? Because they've hit... I was just yawning while I was speaking there. The professionalism has gone through the floor today, if it was ever there. But they beat Bologna 2-0, Genoa. Davide Ballardini appears to have turned things around. I think that's 7 points now in the last three games. And Mattia Destro scored again.
Yeah, a couple of things made me laugh when watching this game. So, first of all, I want to give massive, massive praise to both sides for playing on what is possibly the worst pitch in the Italian top flight. The bobbles as players attempted to make passes was just amazing. Genoa appeared to have this trend of starting a season with a coach, starting awfully, then having a real sort of new coach bounce, whatever it is we call it, and then dragging themselves to safety by sort of a couple of points, which is largely a reflection of the points that they pick up just after that new coach comes in. Then moving on to Mattia Destro, which the thing that makes me laugh is, you know, oh, he's...
He's
prolific. That he's in a prolific run of form. That was something that, again, one of the commentators said. And I thought, well, yeah, it's easy to be prolific when you score so few goals as he does. to sort of steal a living as calling yourself a sort of top flight striker. And also when, you know, he'll have really wanted that because it's because it's against one of his former sides. It's like, well, yeah, that's because he's had about 10 clubs. I'm probably well out there by about 4 or 5 clubs, but I can think of at least a sort of a handful. And it's like, well, yeah, he's going to score against his former side because half the league is he's ran out for at one stage or another.
Yeah, you're right. I remember looking this up recently and being shocked that he had actually played for so many fewer teams than I had originally thought. There's really not that many, at least as many as you would think. It's more that he's had a few moves. So it was Genoa, Siena, Roma, Milan, Bologna, Genoa. But, I mean, he's not like... He's 29. You know, he's been around for 10 years and he's been on the move basically more than every other year. So
he's still got Udinese to rock up at.
Yeah.
Because that's a given.
Parma as well, probably.
Parma. Yeah. And actually, in the area that he is, probably a nice move location-wise is Hellas Verona. You know, when they get bored of Nikola Kalinic scoring one goal a season. he'll get through at least 10 by the time his career's finished, I imagine.
Well, Nikola Kalinic did get his one goal for the season on Sunday against Crotone. Verona 1-2-1. Federico Di Marco got the other goal, and that man, Junior Messias, scored again for Crotone. But Di Marco, I don't rate him very highly, but he's hit a little bit of a purple patch, a little bit of a hot streak, and his finish today again was very, very nice. It does seem like he's finding a little bit of a swagger under Ivan Juric, but I have to admit, I was shocked when I saw that Kalinic scored.
Yeah, I was, when I saw the highlights, I watched it the day after I'd seen that Kalinic had scored, yet I still assumed it was somebody else. such was the sort of composure on the finish. I'm making my notes, and I've already seen the result the day before, and I'm just looking to see who it is amongst the players that scored the goals, because I just jot it down. I was like, oh yes, God, he scored. And I thought, oh, what a composed finish, but he has got it in him. He just really benefited from that one year when he got, was it Dnipro to the UEFA Cup?
Yes, yeah.
The Europa League final. Showing my age, everybody.
I remember the UEFA Cup as well, so don't worry too much about that. But it's bad, isn't it, with Kalinic and Destro, that you see that they've scored and you're shocked. I mean, they're strikers for Serie A clubs. It shouldn't be the case, but that's just what their careers have come to.
Yeah, it was... there was a discussion, not in the pub, because we've not been to public houses for a while. I think it was Christian Benteke in the Premier League. He hadn't scored for 34 games, and it got us onto a wider discussion as to how long or how many goals do you have to score in, say, a 30 game period for you to no longer be allowed to call yourself a top flight striker. And I imagine, you know, or how many minutes do you have to pay, maybe? Because there's obviously people that sit as reserve strikers for a while. But yeah, Destro and Kalinic probably fall into that category at the moment, that it feels like they don't really earn the right to call themselves a striker.
No, absolutely correct. Dusan Vlahovic scored the only goal as Fiorentina beat Cagliari 1-0. And, I mean, Vlahovic has hit a little bit of form as well. He's another one who I've not really ever understood all that much. There's a lot of hype around him. He's young, and I understand that. But I don't know. Cagliari, Kev, what's going on there?
I got excited by the fact that Udinese had thrown up an entertaining game, that I decided to then watch Fiorentina Cagliari, and I watched Cagliari in midweek because they were the first game on Wednesday when they played Crotone, and it was almost the same again tonight, where it was I wrote down all huff no puff. They sort of looked like they were sort of moving up the pitch and threatening to create a chance. And they did even get to the create a chance stage, where you sort of can criticise people for being wasteful in front of goal. It would be nice for them to actually get a few clear-cut chances. I must admit, we weren't subjected to Radja Nainggolan sort of spending the last 10 minutes or so sort of just smashing strikes from long distance, because they weren't creating anything. But in a way, both sides really did that a little. Just Fiorentina were fortunate to be one goal better off.
Di Francesco afterwards spoke about him having a lot of anger that they didn't deserve to lose. They missed a penalty against Fiorentina away, I know. And he also said that they're worried about their survival, which you don't often hear coaches say at this point of a season. You know, they usually go with the one game at a time type thing. And apparently Di Francesco's job is under observation now. So there's every chance that by the time a lot of you listen to this, he might well be out of a job. And it's just gone quite wrong for him, basically everywhere other than Sassuolo. He had his moments at Roma. Okay, I'll give him that. But Sampdoria was a disaster. Cagliari's not going to plan either. Is he running the risk of kind of, I don't want to say becoming unemployable, but getting himself into a position where coaches or clubs won't want to take a risk with him?
Yeah, particularly if you're sort of you're leaving sides in such a sort of perilous position towards the foot of the table, and where he's kind of always been renowned as a coach that follows a particular
style, brand.
Style, yeah. There was a different word I was thinking. Philosophy.
Okay.
Yeah, I knew it began with a P, but because it didn't sound like a P, that's what baffled me. It is like...
We get some fascinating insight into how your mind works sometimes, Kev.
Oh, God. It's got to work first, Connor. But yeah, so I think when you're looking at a coach like that, you want evidence that where he's gone, he's been able to get everybody on board with his ideas, but also turn it into performances relatively quickly. Whereas it seems to go in the other direction in, you know, his last couple of coaching roles. So he could struggle to find employment, as opposed to, if you like, less attack-minded or dynamic thinking coaches that just kind of come in and do a job and sort of save you from relegation.
Elsewhere, the final game of the weekend is going to be played not on the weekend, it's played on Monday evening. It's a Ligurian derby of sorts. Spezia play against Sampdoria. I almost said that word again when I didn't mean to, so apologies. As Kev said, it's late and it's later for me. So we've reached the end of the podcast. There's no game this week. Obviously, we were without Vito Doria again. Hopefully, we will be able to welcome him back into our warm embrace next weekend after round 18. Kev, have you anything else to say before we wrap up?
No, I don't think so.
Wonderful. That's a first. And then I suppose you can say goodbye.
Ciao, ciao, everybody.
And goodbye from me. We'll speak to you soon.
Viva! Viva!
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.